Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
New Year's Eve, we expect, as per usual, over a million people. I'm not quite sure why a million people want to stand in the freezing cold for long, long periods of time, but they do. And we'll be ready for them.
And they'll be ready for them, we hope. And why do they? Mayor de Blasio speaking to reporters yesterday, wondering along with many New Yorkers why people want to come from Iowa or wherever to do that ball drop in the cold thing on New Year's Eve. Do you wonder about it too? It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, and we usually begin on Fridays with our weekly Ask the Mayor call-in with Mayor de Blasio. He's taking the holiday week off from it today. Maybe he's in deep contemplation about the mysteries of the ball-watching crowd. So we'll begin instead with the woman who would become mayor if, for any reason, Mayor de Blasio were to leave office. The next in line, the New York City public advocate. So today it's Ask the Public Advocate with New York City public advocate Letitia James. Public advocate, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian, and hello to all of your listeners.
And I'm just teasing, of course, about the mayor being in deep contemplation about New Year's Eve ball watching today. Everyone deserves some holiday time off. I'll be off next Friday, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick, will be filling in for me. Do you get why people want to come to New York and watch the ball drop?
Sure. So yesterday I tweeted in response to the mayor not understanding why people stand in the cold to watch the ball drop, that it's a New York City thing, and that he basically just doesn't get it.
But wait, I think I'm on his side on this. Is it a New York City thing or is it a tourist thing? Because as a born and bred New Yorker, I have always wanted to avoid that scene.
Well, believe it or not, there's countless number of New Yorkers who go down to see the ball drop. I'm one of them. And then, yes, there's New Yorkers and there's tourists and we all mix together. But it really speaks to the exceptionalism of New York and how spectacular New York City is. And it is an event that attracts millions and millions and millions. And so I absolutely love it. I also love those who go to Coney Island and who are polar bears who run in the ocean. And the Atlantic Ocean. I don't understand that.
On New Year's Day, right?
On New Year's Day. In fact, perhaps some council members, I understand, might be doing that on New Year's Day.
Before we open up the phones, let's just start for a few minutes and kind of establish what your office does, because a lot of people don't know about Public Advocate, and also the big picture as you see it as Public Advocate. Mayor de Blasio has made fighting inequality the central organizing principle of his administration. And I know inequality is a central concern of yours, too. Has the city made meaningful progress, in your opinion, in fighting inequality during the 3 years in which you've both been in citywide office?
So we've made some progress, and I'm happy to report that as we usher in 2017, there'll be a new law that will be passed, that has been passed, that will go into effect, which will increase the minimum wage for a countless number of New Yorkers. That will go a long way in addressing income inequality in the city of New York. We've been working on increasing the amount of affordable housing. Obviously, we need to provide more subsidies so that we can go deeper and provide more housing for low and moderate income and families. And of course, the number one challenge in the city of New York is homelessness, where, 60,000 New Yorkers, a third of them are children, and a significant number of individuals who are homeless, a number of them suffer from mental illness, and we see them on our subways. And there's been a couple of incidents of individuals who suffer from mental illness who engage in certain types of crimes on our subways and who put people in harm's way. We need to do all that we can do to address homelessness and addressing and providing supportive housing for individuals who are suffering from mental illness. And the only way to do that is to work with the state of New York.
When you say fighting inequality, when anybody says it, what's really important there to you? You just mentioned a few things. But in a city that includes Wall Street with its astronomical top salaries, that includes various glamour professions, and at the same time millions of new immigrants getting a foothold, there's going to be inequality. So when we say fighting inequality, is it really about bringing up the bottom, regardless of where the top is, with things like the mayor would emphasize have happened on his watch, like guaranteed paid sick leave and universal pre-K? You just mentioned the new minimum wage law, because opportunities and protections for the lowest income workers and other lowest income people among us have been too absent?
It's really about bringing up the bottom. You're absolutely right, and making sure that all boats are brought to the top. And it's about creating living wage jobs in the city of New York and providing opportunities for those who unfortunately do not have a college degree. We've lost manufacturing. Industrial jobs have left. The manufacturing base has just gone south. And so what we really need to do is to create more opportunities for those individuals with limited skills. And so it's really creating opportunities. And I know that the mayor of the city of New York, working with the state as well as with members of Congress, we've tried to attract other types of businesses, high-tech businesses, low-tech businesses to the city of New York, and particularly to the outer boroughs. And yes, you're absolutely right. It is skewed. I mean, if you look at Wall Street and you look at parts of Manhattan, it's totally out of sync with those residents who are living in parts of Brooklyn and in the Bronx and Queens who are struggling each and every day. And we see a middle class, which unfortunately is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And what we really need to do is grow the middle class by providing good paying jobs, living wage jobs in the city of New York.
And how do we do that? Conservatives would say that progressives in general, when they talk about inequality, are too focused on redistribution and not focused enough on growth.
So I think it's really both. I think it's obviously a redistribution, universal child care, pre-K, universal pre-K, minimum wage, pension security, focusing on the gap from women, the gender gap that currently exists. Women are not paid as much as men for doing basically the same job. But also at the same time, it's creating opportunities and providing education. So one of the things that I have been focusing on is making sure that college, and particularly CUNY and community colleges, are more affordable to New Yorkers. There's a push right now to go back to the time when it was free. I don't know whether or not we're going to be able to do that, but we should create opportunities so that more and more individuals can attend community colleges, not only in the city, but throughout this nation.
So you're in the same job that Bill de Blasio had before becoming mayor, public advocate.
Mm-hmm.
You're next in line. If anything were to happen to the mayor's health, God forbid, or if he had to resign due to scandal, he's under investigation, or for any other reason, do you stay ready in some way, just in case?
I focus on my job as public advocate of the city of New York, and I really don't focus on what should happen. The mayor is in excellent health, and I'm hoping that all works out for the mayor in the coming years. This is really, it's really about making sure that in New York City, we can improve the life, the quality of life for individuals who are struggling under the weight of poverty, and again, grow our middle class, and again, continue to attract tourists and grow an economic base which inures to the benefit of all New Yorkers. That's really my focus in, as public advocate of the city of New York.
Public advocate is a job with a small staff and a small budget. De Blasio had that same situation before becoming mayor. I see that some of your office's priorities recently have been salary history legislation, homelessness, which you mentioned before, child protection services, and the issues related to the 2016 election. Is that basically the right list for your recent top priorities?
So, yeah, and we've been focusing on a lot of litigation. We have, initiated litigation against the mayor and the state of New York on a wide range of issues, primarily related to the Department of Education, focusing on special needs children. We've been focusing, as you mentioned, on private pensions. We've introduced and passed more legislation than any other public advocate in recent history. As of today, we have resolved over 25,000 constituent complaints, primarily related to housing. We're focusing on slumlords, our worst landlord list in the city of New York. So although we have a small budget, I come from humble means, and I've been taught that you can do a lot with less. And so we've been doing a lot more in making the Office of Public Advocate more relevant in the lives of New Yorkers.
Tell me more about some of the lawsuits. I think when people, who paid any attention to the job of public advocate since it was created about 25 years ago through Mark Green when he had the job, Betsy Gottbaum, Bill de Blasio, now you, maybe lawsuits isn't the first thing they think of. How do you use, and I know you're a lawyer, you have some prosecutor background, right?
Public defender.
Public defender.
Yeah.
How do you use lawsuits?
So I am a former public defender and a former assistant attorney general. And as a former assistant attorney general, I focus primarily on civil rights litigation impact legislation. But I, as a public defender, I've been committed to justice all of my life. And so I brought a legal component to the Office of Public Advocate because the office had in the past, primarily under the former public advocate Mark Green, had basically sued the Giuliani administration, primarily focusing on FOIL's Freedom of Information request. Our office has expanded that, and we've tested the boundaries. We've sued the Department of Education over hot buses, disabled children who were traveling on hot buses during the summer months. We were successful in that. We sued on a CSIS, a tracking system that would track children the Department of Education is required to provide certain services to children, and they were not because of a broken system known as CSIS. We sued. We were successful on that. We sued, again, the Department of Education on open meetings law. School leadership teams were not open to the parents and or the general public. We sued. We were successful on that. We sued on a wide range of litigation, including but not limited to the Administration for Children's Services, focusing on the number of children who unfortunately were falling through the cracks, and we argued that the ACS was in desperate need of reform.
So now we open the phones for Ask the Public Advocate in place of Ask the Mayor this week. Anything you want to ask, New York City Public Advocate Letitia James, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Excuse me. What are the most common things that people generally contact your office about?
Public housing, NYCHA. The conditions of NYCHA are horrendous. And that's why I'm just so concerned about this new administration. I'm troubled by some of the comments. I'm troubled by the fact that Ben Carson, who knows little if or anything about housing, has been appointed as Secretary of HUD. I look forward to working with this administration, and I look forward to having a meeting with Ben Carson. I've requested a meeting with Mr. Carson to talk about the needs for public housing. Right now, they are in need of $1 billion in capital repairs and to bring it up to a state of good repair. And so public housing is the number one complaint to our office. In addition to that, housing in general, individuals in rent control, rent stabilized apartments, individuals who are being harassed by their landlords, who are being evicted, individual children. We get a lot of calls from parents whose children were removed by the Administration for Children's Services, and they're seeking attorneys and some legal advice. And then just individuals who need to get past the bureaucracy of government in the city of New York. Our caseworkers and social workers who are on call assist these individuals. And as I mentioned earlier, as of to date, the Office of Public Advocate, despite having a limited budget, we have resolved over 25,000 complaints.
Diane on Staten Island, you're on WNYC with Public Advocate Letitia James. Hi, Diane.
Good morning. My question is that ACS over the years really hasn't changed. Every year we hear of a child dying in the hands either of foster care or their parents. And I was wondering, you know, what is your view in changing that? And also, why isn't it more of a multi-departments coming together? Because, you know, I hear that caseworkers are afraid to go into public housing sometimes. You know, why aren't they escorted by, you know, housing police? Why isn't a social worker with the caseworker? It seems that if more departments work together, it could possibly help instead of the way it's being handled now.
Excellent question, Diane, and let me just say hello to all of my friends on Staten Island. I love Staten Island so much, and I know oftentimes it's referred to as the forgotten borough. It'll never be forgotten in my mind. Uh-huh. You're right. Time and time again, ACS, unfortunately, has failed to protect vulnerable children living in abusive and neglective homes. And one of the reforms that I've called for is that ACS right now needs to be split up into several different agencies, and we need rigorous oversight over contract agencies, and we need to adequately train and supervise caseworkers. And you're right, caseworkers and protective workers have indicated to me that they need social workers, more social workers on staff to determine the needs of families. And they need security when they go into certain areas where they're concerned for their safety. And so we need ongoing, and last but not least, I've called for ongoing supports to children and their families. Families contact my office Their child has been removed. They're in desperate need of drug counseling, mental health services. And unfortunately, the agency that supervises that particular family does not have those services available. And that child continues to remain in foster care over a period of time, costing all of us millions and millions of taxpaying dollars. What we need are more services for family. We need to make sure that all contract agencies have those services and that there's oversight over those agencies and questions, because we do not need any more Zamir Perkins and Jaden Jordan incidents, children who've lost their lives because these children have unfortunately fallen through the cracks. And again, I pray for their souls, and I hope that going forward that we can avoid these types of incidents if, in fact, this administration embraces reforms, as I've called for over the years.
And Diane, thanks a lot for your call. Since you said you love Staten Island so much,
yes,
and the people of Staten Island will never be forgotten by you, that's the only borough in the city that voted for Trump. And they voted for Trump pretty convincingly by a wider percentage margin than the state of Texas, for example, voted for Trump. Do you think it's because Democratic Party principles or priority or management or anything have not served the people of Staten Island well?
So I don't think this is unique to Staten Island. I think the Democratic Party, unfortunately, has not reached out to middle-class New Yorkers and middle-class Americans, and that we really need to reach out to those states and those districts that are suffering from economic anxiety. Listen, I live in Central Brooklyn. I live in a neighborhood which is rapidly gentrified, but we all live together. And as I, on the day of the election, I went to a store and I saw four African-American men who said to me, "Tish, you know, we like you, but we did not vote for your candidate." And I said, "Why?" And they said, "Because we're all unemployed and because we need jobs and because Donald Trump talked about infrastructure and what we need are jobs to provide for our families." Those economic anxieties are the same economic anxieties that they're feeling in Virginia. And so we need to speak to those issues, and the Democratic Party needs to realize and recognize that we have more in common than not, and we should focus on our commonality as opposed to our differences.
Cassius in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with public advocate Letitia James. Hi, Cassius.
Hey, good morning. Ms. James, I think the major issue, the biggest issue in the city, is hyper development, over development, and Mr. Tony Avella, who's running against de Blasio, he came out with some real incisive, real intelligent observations that there's no city planning going on at all currently in our city, that real estate is just at free to just build wherever they want to build. Do you have any plans on putting some limits on real estate in the city?
Cassius, that's an excellent question. And let me tell you a little bit about my history, Cassius. As you know, as a former city council member, I was probably one of a very few elected officials who challenged one of the largest developments in the borough of Brooklyn. That was the Atlantic Yards development. For 10 years, I challenged that project all the way up to the Supreme Court of the United States because it was inconsistent and out of character with a brownstone community. And unfortunately, the developers and the mayor at that time and the governor at that time refused to listen to a community that desperately wanted affordable housing but wanted it on a scale which was consistent with the community. That's what we really need to do. We need to get back to community-based planning. What we need to do is respect the character of community, and what we need to do is put, as you mentioned, this hyper-development. We need to provide some checks and balances so that we can build more affordable housing, supportive housing, but we can also build housing for those individuals who unfortunately make too much to qualify for affordable housing and those who make too little to qualify for affordable housing. And what we need to do is build more homes for families. These condos, all this hyperdevelopment is primarily for singles. The units are very, very small, and they don't accommodate for children. And what we really need to do is get back and think about families in the city, and working families in particular.
Cassius, thank you. How do you do that? When Tony Avella, who has announced that he's running against Mayor de Blasio, he's a state senator from Queens, for people who don't know the name Tony Avella, when he was here for his first campaign interview the other day. He talked about this overdevelopment, too much building in the city, too much construction going on all over the place, against Mayor de Blasio's approach to it, the mandatory inclusionary zoning. But it's one thing to be against development. Nobody wants development in their own neighborhoods ever, it seems. And yet, we've got a housing shortage. That's one of the reasons, the central reason that prices are so high for housing as they are. And we have a growing population. The estimate is 9 million New Yorkers by the year 2030 or so, about 8.5 now. So how do we bring down housing prices without lots of development?
Excellent question. My frame of reference is downtown Brooklyn. And almost 10 years ago, I argued that there would be a glut of apartments on the market in downtown Brooklyn. And in fact, that's the case today. And the rents have gone down. In fact, a number of the developers who built up downtown Brooklyn now are offering you 2 months rent-free because of the glut of apartments. But the problem is that the vast majority of those apartments are not available to local residents who cannot afford them. And what we really – and in downtown Brooklyn, they did not plan for any schools. They did not plan for any supermarkets. They did not plan for all of the amenities that goes into making a family that goes into making a community. And so what we really need to do is get back to basic planning as opposed to just allowing developers to build up high and bring in the thousands of individuals to a community, which unfortunately floods the infrastructure, the subway system, and does not provide for their basic needs, which really is the challenge in downtown Brooklyn. There's not enough schools, there's not enough open spaces, there's not enough amenities, and now we have a glut of apartments online, and I'm just concerned that this trend will continue without any deep dive and deep examination into the basic needs of residents who currently live in those neighborhoods.
Dan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with public advocate Tish James. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just have a question or a comment about your comments about raising the minimum wage. And there's been studies done in other parts of the country, such as Seattle, where minimum wage is increased and employment is decreased. I think your heart is in the right spot, but the data somewhat goes against raising the minimum wage and increasing employment. I own a factory that we moved out of Manhattan, and we did it because of regulation and cost. But people who hire people do it for a return on their investment, not because they want to hire people. When you raise the cost of wages, you decrease the demand for that. I mean, we hire people at a low wage, train them, and they start to make more money as their skill set increases and they're worth more to the organization.
So your philosophy and your business approach is inconsistent with my values as an individual. And my focus has always been in all of the data and all of the reports that I have read indicate that raising the minimum wage is good for the economy, is good for our community, is good for society. It lifts people out of poverty and addresses the needs of individuals who are struggling each and every day. And at the same time, I have spoken to businesses all throughout the city of New York who indicate to me that a return on they appreciate a return on their investment, and raising the minimum wage is not inconsistent. That in fact they can benefit from a return on their investment at the same time provide for those individuals in need.
Yeah. Wait, just excuse me for 1 second.
Sure.
Look at a fast food restaurant that is paying a cashier, call it nine. I don't know what they pay, but let's call it $9 an hour. And then you raise the minimum wage to $12 or $15 an hour, and they put a kiosk in there, a self-order kiosk. That person has now lost their $9 an hour job that they were on track to one day make $12 or $15, move into management. Many of these jobs are not designed, you know, for people to raise a family on. They're designed to get a step up into the world.
But
you know,
what,
a step
but- But what we're seeing are more and more middle-aged individuals who are working in these fast food restaurants. And what you are also seeing is that McDonald's and Burger King and all of these other fast food businesses are relying upon social services to supplement the income of individuals. So taxpayers are paying for the benefits of a lot of these employees of these fast food restaurants who are raking in millions, if not billions, of dollars. And I don't know of any fast food restaurant right now who relies upon kiosks.
Well, I've seen kiosks starting to pop up at McDonald's restaurants in New York City. They're starting to put them in now. I don't know if that's because of the minimum wage increase and they're laying off workers. Maybe they would be doing it anyway as the kiosk technology enables them. And even if it was $4 an hour, they'd still lay off as many people right. as they could lay off. That's possible. but it is happening.
I think it has more to do with technology than anything else, and less to do with minimum wage. And obviously that's something that the city council, as well as my office, that we will look at. But clearly, I do not believe that the embrace of technology has anything to do with the fact that in 2017, more and more individuals will be paid a higher minimum wage in our city and in our state.
All right. The minimum wage debate will certainly go on. Dan, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Let's see. We've done Brooklyn, Manhattan, Staten Island was the first call. And
Queens?
And so let's go to Queens. Bob okay. in Rego Park. You're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Brian. How you doing? First, I'd like to tell Public Advocate, which I love to hear him run for mayor. I could hear her philosophy. And I predict if you ran, you would definitely win.
I love you, Bob.
Thank you. Now, my question is, I live in Rego Park. On the corner of 62nd and Booth Street the other day, there's no stop signs in a quiet street. I've called 311. The woman who got an accident was pregnant with kids. There's an accident all the time. As a public advocate, I was wondering if you could focus on 311 and the people that call up, and specifically when it comes to life and death, like putting a traffic sign, that you could look into those calls and see how they're not responding to the public. They don't respond to the local community.
Thank you, Bob, in Rego Park. We'll look into 311. Part of the problem as a result of the calls that we get to the Office of Public Advocate, a number of individuals have complained to our office that they do not get a response from 311. There is no follow-up. And I think when it comes to issues affecting life and safety, such as no stop signs, that clearly we, the Office of Public Advocate, will monitor that situation to determine how best the City of New York, is responding to those requests. My office will particularly look at 62nd Street and Booth Street at the absence of a stop sign. And I thank you, Bob. I also want to look at the fact that as I travel all throughout the City of New York, there's a number of faded street signs in the city, and DOT needs to do a better job of replacing street signs and do a better demarcation of traffic signals all throughout the City of New York, and street signs all throughout the City of New York, in New York, or along our byways and our highways, particularly since we do have an aging population. We need to make sure that it's marked and it's done so in a fashion so that senior citizens can take advantage of it.
We have a few more minutes for Ask the Public Advocate in place of Ask the Mayor this week here on the Brian Lehrer Show, and let's make it a clean sweep. Ren in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ren.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Okay, so, Ms. James, people were saying that there's a lot of manufacturing jobs that are leaving New York City. I actually have multiple inventions that I would like to bring to the city, but I need to do it as a startup company. So can New York City, the mayor's office or your office, help me with a startup company and bring jobs back to New York City?
So I love startup jobs, and so you should contact the Office of Public Advocate. We can be reached at 212-669-7250. We can do the introduction to the administration, the small business services. We can bring commissioners to the forefront. We can do introductions, and we can support projects, particularly if they create good living wage jobs in the city of New York. We need to grow the middle class. We need to get people off the dole. We need to make sure that individuals who are struggling under the weight of poverty recognize that there is they have a friend in government. And as someone who came from humble beginnings, it's really critically important that we focus on education and we focus, again, on good-paying jobs in this city.
Rand, thank you for your call. Before you go, let's just talk a little bit of politics. Mayor de Blasio has announced that he'll be running for re-election. Will you be running for re-election as public advocate?
I'm running for re-election as public advocate of the city of New York.
I read that Governor Cuomo considered appointing you to be the Brooklyn DA this year after the tragic death of Ken Thompson. Is that something you would have wanted or might want in the future? You mentioned before that you have a public defender background.
It's really flattering that my name has been thrown about. At this point in time, I'm fully focused on my work as public advocate and look forward to my reelection.
City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito is here last week and said she's endorsed the mayor for reelection. Have you?
I've not endorsed the mayor of the city of New York as of yet. We've not had any discussions with regards to the mayor's reelection. At this point in time, I am just focused on the reelection of Letitia James as public advocate of the city of New York.
There are grand juries working right now under Manhattan DA Cy Vance and U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, as you know, deciding whether to indict the mayor or any of his aides in connection with the fundraising issues that have been in the news. Do you have an opinion about whether any of that was out of bounds?
Grand jury investigation is very serious, and for now I'm going to withhold comment pending the results of the investigation.
You were elected city council member in Brooklyn before running for this job as, I think, the first person to be elected on the Working Families Party line, not Democrat or Republican. Do I have that right?
That's correct.
What's the importance of the Working Families Party to the city as you see it in general and going into the election year of 2017?
It was an outgrowth of the Democratic Party. It was in response to the Liberal Party back then. It is a fusion party that works hand-in-hand with the Democratic Party to create alternatives and third-party candidates. I was elected, as most of you know, in the aftermath of the assassination of James Davis. The brother of James Davis ran on the Democratic line. The district that I represent, Fort Greene, Clinton Hill, Prospect Heights, and parts of Bedford-Stuyvesant, wanted an alternative. They basically petitioned me to run on the Working Families Party line, and the rest is history.
New York City public advocate Letitia James, in place of Mayor de Blasio, who usually does this Friday 10 a.m. spot with an Ask the Mayor segment. It's been fun to do Ask the Public Advocate.
Hey, my own spot.
Thank you for asking everybody's question. One way or another, we'll keep talking in 2017.
Thank you, Brian, and Happy New Year to you and to all of your listeners and to all New Yorkers.
Thank you very much, and Happy New Year to you. Stay warm if you're actually going out to watch the ball drop tomorrow night.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Slate Magazine's new tool. It's a plug-in for telling real news from fake news. Stay with us.